Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And a pleasant good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. I'm Mike Haas, Jeff Nowak joining us as well as we get ready for week one of the regular season. It's a build up to the start of the NFL season. We get excited because it's training camp, and we get excited because it's the first preseason game, and then it's the roster, and then it's week one, and now it is for real. Saints and the Panthers, noon on Sunday, the beginning of a very difficult and challenging first five games. And as I said, Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak joining us tonight. And Jeff, it's hard not to look at the first five games. And the game six and seven are not easy. It's Denver and Tampa, but you do kind of lock in on that first five. And really with Carolina, it's not a must win, but it certainly feels like we've already put 1-0 up there, right?
Yeah, I was talking to Steve about this yesterday, and it's like you can't ever call a week one game a must win. But if there ever was a must win in terms of you really can't afford to lose this game to start your season, especially when you're trying to kind of turn around some of the vibes that have been circulating in terms of, hey, let's get the season off to a good start. Let's not get behind the eight ball the way we have been each of the last three seasons, right, with bad losses early in the year that kept you out of the postseason. There's no excuse for losing to a two-win team from last year, even if they have a new head coach and a new system. So, yeah, I mean, you can't look past the Panthers. I think that's the issue. It's really easy to look at, man, Dallas and then Philadelphia and then Atlanta and then Kansas City. You got to go beat Tampa for Carolina first, and we'll see. Hopefully they can do it.
Not a ton of news, but the official, if you will, depth chart out. And there was no surprises, at least for me. But when you kind of think about where we were in Irvine in mid-July, and it was kind of, hey, let's take a look at the quarterback battle. Who's going to be number two? What's going to happen with the offensive line? Will some of these question marks get fulfilled at left tackle, left guard, and right tackle? And at that time, Nick Saldivari was the left guard. And then finally, what would happen with the safety position opposite Tyrann Mathieu? I don't know that we're a whole lot different as from an answer standpoint. I don't know if that's bad or good. It is what it is. It'll all come out in the coming weeks. But it's kind of, I don't know if the word is strange, but we're still kind of talking about those three things in September as we did in mid-July.
Yeah, well, only one of those positions, or at least I guess two of those positions, are really a factor on game day, right? So you're talking about left guard, and that's looks like it's going to be Lucas Patrick right now. Nick Saldivari is slotted into the depth chart as the backup. We'll see if that changes. I think they like Nick Saldivari. They were going to give him a shot to be the starter for a reason. So I think if Lucas struggles, they won't hesitate to pull that trigger in terms of switching them out with Nick Saldivari getting back to practice this week. With strong safety, Dennis Allen has been very coy about telling us really anything that he can keep a secret, he's keeping a secret. Well, on this depth chart, it does have Jordan Howden at the starting strong safety spot, and that is something that's been a question in terms of, would it be Will Harris? Would it be Howden? Would it be maybe even Jonathan Abram, who's on the practice squad right now? So it looks like it's going to be Jordan Howden. So we can at least put that question to rest for now. And then the backup conversation, everyone's really excited about Spencer Rattler. I understand why. The Saints are kind of dedicated to this. We're going to evaluate. We're going to develop both guys. They're still going to be competing throughout the season, whatever that looks like. I'm not even sure what that would be in terms of you're not getting them a ton of reps throughout the week, so how exactly are they competing? But they put a nice little or on the depth chart. So they have still not yet announced the QB2. They will have to on Sunday. Right. They will have to declare one guy in terms of headset, right? Right? Like you can't have three quarterbacks, and most likely they'll have one of those two guys be the emergency backup option, which you do have to declare in advance. So they will have to take some level of a stand in terms of who are they going to actually make the backup. And I'm sure people won't overreact to that decision at all. That's me being facetious. But it's going to happen one way or the other.
Well, but it's kind of like they are drawing some attention to it, and they don't mean to. It is what it is. Dennis wants the competition. I appreciate that. But it's like we're still talking about it because there probably aren't a whole lot of teams that have Orr on their first depth chart. Maybe a few, right? But maybe not at quarterback. So, you know, you're right. It's really comes down to really that the left guard situation. And because who starts at safety might mean very little by the time you get to play six, right? I mean, it's kind of based on situational and the formation. Same thing with tight end. You know, Foster Moreau starts at tight end. I don't know that it means, you know, a whole lot. I guess this is a tough one, but your thoughts on what the first injury report might look like, or who do you feel confident will be on there?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah,
but you know the guy I'm going to be looking for is Willie Gay. He missed practice on Monday. It's weird because typically we wouldn't even be at a Monday practice to even tell you whether a guy was there or not. You know, this was just kind of a bonus practice last week because of the open week, or this week because of the open week. So if we asked Dennis Allen what the injury was, he's in full week one mode. You know, during training camp, the guy would get hurt. We'd say, hey, what's he dealing with? He'd say, he got an ankle, he's got whatever. This week, he said, you'll find out on Wednesday when we give you the initial injury report. So again, it's very much okay, if I could keep something a secret for any period of time, I'm going to keep it a secret, even if it doesn't make sense or not. He won't even tell us whether Clint Kubiak is going to be up in the booth or down on the field. They have made a decision. He just won't tell us. So that's going to be something we figure out. But Willie Gay's injury is going to be one to watch. DeMarco Jackson and Jalen Ford also didn't practice. So we'll have to see their participation if they're able to get back. Nick Saldivari, as we mentioned, he got back to practice. I would imagine he would have been listed as limited. So we'll see how he develops throughout the week. Mason Tipton and Kool-Aid McKinstry and Marshawn Lattimore have all been out there for the last few practices. So that's a good sign.
Saunders?
The only other guy to watch really is Colin Saunders has been out as well.
Okay.
And then Dallin Hawker has been out with an ankle injury. Colin's dealing with a calf, and I think he's going to be out for a little while. But yeah, those are the injuries to watch, and it'll be one of those things where we think we have an idea of what's going on, and then it all changes. So it's always a losing battle to try to guess in advance.
That is correct. We'll find out a lot more tomorrow. The Saints back at it as they get ready for Carolina noon on Sunday in the renovated Caesars Superdome. Later on in the show, we'll talk to Ben Hales, the Saints Executive Vice President of Marketing, Chief Operating Officer, about the Superdome and all the messaging efforts by the team. We'll take a break. Back with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak after this on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseball Balls and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Saints Hour, Mike Haas, joined now by my hotel roommates in Irvine, California for a month, Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, Deuce McAllister, the best color analyst in the world. But we get back to New Orleans. Do they call? Do they see how we're doing? Do we have lunch? Do we have dinner, breakfast? No. We all go about our lives. How are we doing, boys?
Doing good. Sorry I didn't check in.
It's all right. You know, just no call. You know, I got a haircut. Nobody said anything. No big deal. I'll get over it. How are we doing, Deuce?
Well, hey, I'm doing well. I do know where you go to get your haircut, and I know what the towel is and how they tell you to, hey, you know, we're going to use this fresh shampoo, and don't worry, sir, we have everything. Take your shoes off as you come in.
Don't forget the massage.
Yeah, the massage, and take your shoes off as you come in to get your haircut, sir. No, it's a little bit different than Groundhog Day, what we experienced the last, 6 weeks ago, or, you know, from the beginning,
yep,
at least.
Well, I guess give me your thoughts, Deuce. As we sit here, this would be, you know, a normal day off for the team, and tomorrow they get back to what would be called a normal week one. And you look at this roster, you saw what you saw the preseason games. Is this team about where you thought they would be?
I don't know if they're ever where you thought they would be. I mean, there's always going to be concerns, whether you feel good about one position, one player, you still have concerns. I think that's what every team, you know, and some teams have, I guess, their strengths, what they feel really good about, and then, you know, they're going to be the question marks. Even though Fuagua has played really well, you still question what will it look like in a complete game. He hadn't played a complete game. You know, none of these guys, as far as the starters, have played into late into the third quarter or into a fourth quarter. So the first thing that you wonder and you question is conditioning of players. And here's something, guys. There were some agents today that were clapping their hands. Most people thought the rosters for veterans became official when they made the team. It was actually today. It's actually Tuesday, the end of close of business for the NFL. I think it's, what, 4 years or more is when a vested veteran, mm-hmm. I think that's what, yep. what they call it now with the new CBA. Vested veteran, if they are on a roster, if they were on a roster today, they get credit for this year as an accrued season. So there are agents across the NFL celebrating with their players because they officially made the 53-man roster today. That was my little cool fact.
No, I love that.
One more thing. You talked about it, a normal Wednesday. Monday, yesterday, was bonus Monday from a player's and a coach's standpoint. When you think about it, there is no more film that they can go and watch. You have watched so much Carolina Panthers and Tampa Bay film that you're sick of it. This, I think we talked about this. This was the longest stretch that you will watch for any opponent, and that's just because it's the offseason. So there is no more film that you can go and watch. You know, they've probably looked at the games or the cut-ups or at least a film of Carolina. I would give it a minimum. And then we're talking about probably four games, maybe five different cut-ups or situations, you know, where you go and you break it down 15, 20 minutes. But you've probably watched a minimum of 4 to 6 games of Carolina. I mean, easy up to this point.
And the preseason games, it was unwatchable. You couldn't, I mean, I think
worthless.
Bryce Young played one series, so you really can't, you know.
You're not going to watch anything from a preseason game. You'll go through it, but you'll basically pull out. I want to pull out first down runs. I want to pull out. I want to pull out third down passes. I want to pull out red zone. I want to pull out short yardages. I mean, because some teams may not even got into a goal line situation. So you'll have to watch it. You may watch clips of it, but the preseason is not what you focus on. It's going to be Carolina from a personnel standpoint, and it's going to be Tampa from what they did from the offensive standpoint. So you've watched Tampa, but it was really from, hey, what tendency can we find on third down? What did they like to do in red zone? What did they like to do in short yardage? What did they like to do in third down? And so now they have got that cut up, and that's what I meant by 20 minutes. There are probably 20 minutes of cut ups that they've went back and watched. And so you try to find tendencies, but the problem becomes you've got too much time. So you have to try to squeeze some of that stuff out. Now, you'll still carry a lot, but you'll still try to cut some of it out because it's too much. It's almost information overload.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask both of you this. Jeff, I'll begin with you because you're there. Just your overall takeaway from the Alvin Kamara interview, and the focus is going to be the house. I don't care, you know, but I just feel like when he gets in there, I don't care what he's running for. We have to look at the past. What have we seen? We've seen Alvin Kamara be Alvin Kamara. Just what was your takeaway from that interview?
I mean, yeah, so he's selling his house. His brother's a real estate agent, and you know, if he can get 2.75 for a house in Bill Chase, that's probably not a terrible decision. But I think Alvin, what's become clear with Alvin over the last, I don't know, couple of years is he's aware of his age. Like, it's not like he's denying the fact that, like, okay, I'm 29. This is a point where running backs don't typically, I don't know if it's typically, but, you know, this is where you see a lot of teams start to lose faith with running backs, whether that's fair or not. And so he's kind of I think he's just aware of his own career mortality to an extent. And that's where the want for a contract came from. That said, he did say that he's not interested in talking about the contract during the season. So it doesn't sound like that's going to be something that we talk about much more. And it's going to be on Alvin, and I think he understands this, to prove that that was a bad decision. right? To prove the Saints would have saved money if they had tried to work this out in advance. And we'll see. And, you know, I think there's a lot that's going to ride on Alvin this season in terms of whether this offense can work or not. Because I think a big part of how the Saints can get this offense to operate is, the way I put it, is protecting the protection, making it so you don't have to sit in pass sets constantly. So you're not in third and eight. So your play action works, right? So, because you want to run it through the play action, but if your run game is not working and the wide receivers aren't trusted in the blocking, then your play action is not going to work. So I think that's a lot of it. It's just he's going to have a big role in this offense one way or the other.
Yep.
And I think this is a big season for him, and I think he's aware of that too.
Deuce?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, at the end of the day, he's into real estate. He's into a lot of different businesses. So from a business standpoint, he felt like that, hey, you know, this is something that I wanted to do at some point. It was never a situation where I considered it a quote-unquote dream. And, you know, is it a coincidence that he's selling it when a new contract opportunity or hadn't been worked? You know, hey, possibly not. I'm not in that particular situation to say. But at the end of the day, I think for him, he wants to focus on football. Does it probably cross his mind at some point? Is it crossing his mind heavily? I don't think so. I think that he is a confident in what he can do, and, you know, to be able to go out there and allow his agent to kind of handle and work on that. I'm sure that numbers will be thrown across the table here before the season officially starts. Just because, you know, they can still work on that. And you have seen, I think it was Cam Hayward today that got a deal done for himself. And so you'll see some stuff, some more transactions before the games actually kick off, or at least, you know, Kansas City and Green Bay, they play Thursday and Friday. But before some of the Sunday game kicks off, you may see some more action with some players getting some deals done right there before the season. But as far as his play is concerned, I think that he is going to have a big year. And, you know, you can't, from an offensive standpoint, allow him to have to be taken out of the game because, you know, a team is going to just blitz him, and they're not going to respect your run. And, you know, you're forcing him to be more of a blocker instead of a multi-role player.
Got to take a break. Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, Jeff Nowak. This is the Saints Hour, back after a quick break here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. Mike Haas here on the Saints Hour, along with New Orleans Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak. And Deuce, want to begin with you today. Taysom Hill was officially named as one of the captains and was officially kind of put at tight end from the quarterback room. He could put, you know, you put him in any position, doesn't really matter, just makes him better. Is he a position, if I were to say, where do the Saints have a matchup advantage for Carolina Saints offense defense? Is he one of those positions? I guess that's kind of a two-edged question. Talk about Taysom a little bit, and is there a position where the Saints have a markedly advantage against Carolina?
For me, I don't know if it's necessarily a position. I think it's more of a matchup. And so when Taysom comes on the field, I want to know, well, first, congratulations to him being named the captain. It's always a great honor to have the respect of your teammates. I mean, I think that speaks volumes for him and the work that he's put in and that they see in his leadership skills. So first, congratulations for that honor. As far as a position, it doesn't really matter to me, particularly when the other quarterback is on the field, because now I can line him up, whether it's tight end, whether it's the F at fullback, whether it's the H at halfback, or he's split out wide as a flex tight end. I want to know what defense does when he is on the field. What are they playing? Are they playing nickel? Are they playing 4-3? And now for the Saints, what other players do they bring in with Taysom? Is it a true fullback into the game? So now Taysom lines up at tight end, or does he line up at the halfback position? Is there another halfback? Is Alvin in the game with him? So now are they treating him as a tight end, and what defense did they go to? Did they check to base? Because most defense plays, you know, base against 21 personnel. If they bring another tight end into the game, what do they do? Do they go to the nickel? And so once you've seen how they're going to play him from that standpoint, it allows me to create matchups. And he said, "What do you mean you're going to create matchups?" Well, I'm going to go. We're in 12. You know. Well, let's just call it. You only have you have Alvin, two tight ends. I don't know what they call it, but let's call it 13 personnel. So normally that's going to get a 4-3. That's normally going to be even a 4-3 base defense, 13 personnel. Once I move Alvin out of the backfield, and if I put Taysom at the H, at the traditional tailback position, who goes and cover Alvin? How are they going to play that? If I flex one guy and I have two players on one right side, Alvin's lined up as a receiver, or, you know, the receiver is in trips, how are they playing that? So that's what I want to identify. You create isolations, you create mismatches, but you also create it via personnel and how you're moving and tinkering with the pieces.
Jeff, is there an area that you feel the Saints, and it could be offense or defense, we always seem to focus on the offense. We haven't talked a lot about Carolina's defense or the Saints' defense. I mean, I guess it's, you know, that's a good thing, really, from a Saints defense standpoint. But if you were to look at the game book and go, all right, you know, they needed to win this area, this battleground on Sunday, what would it be?
That's tough. I think it's going to vary week to week. I think just generally speaking, rushing coverage is an area where I need this team to be dominant. And I think we make the mistake sometimes of talking about the pass rush and talking about coverage as if they're two separate things. And I don't think one can be great without the other being at least pretty good, right? If you can't cover, the ball's coming out to a wide open receiver. If you never get to the quarterback, then eventually a receiver's going to come open. So, you know, with Chase Young, with Cam Jordan, with Carl Granderson, and ideally with Marshawn Lattimore and Paulson Adebo on the field, it looks like Marshawn's going to be ready to go. Khalid McKinstry is back at practice as well. So, I mean, if that can be an elite unit, then I think this everything gets easier, right? Like, when you hear a lot of people talk about the Saints, they just tend to focus on the offense, like you mentioned. But it becomes a lot easier to play offense when you're getting put in advantageous situations, when you're playing with a lead, right? When you're not constantly trying to answer score after score after score. And I think if this Saints season, if this Saints team can find success in the way that I think the team feels like they can, and maybe not a ton of people outside the building agree with, it's going to be through that. It's going to be through being a dominant pass rush and coverage defense. And I think that's got to start against the team that allowed, what, the most sacks in the NFL last year?
60,
right?
Yeah.
Bryce Young.
62 for him.
I mean, if that's going to be a good kind of litmus test for where this pass rush is.
Well, gentlemen, I begin.
Can I follow up on
sure.
that? What Jeff just said. Here's the thing, Jeff. When you talk about that, knowing that he was sacked so many times, what does that tell you? They're going to play action. They're going to run the football. They're going to try to move the pocket. So for the Saints, if they don't stop the run, because this team is going to try to run the football, if the Saints don't stop the run, they're not going to get in many opportunities where they can say we can get after the pass rusher, because they're going to continue to be committed to running the football. And then you're going to get the movement of the pocket, and, you know, you'll get the shot plays down the field. But for me, even the Saints, I mean, both of these teams, whoever can establish some type of run game and be committed to running the football, I think that's who's going to win this football game. Now, is that a cliche? Probably so. But, I mean, at this point, the way that these teams are built, if they can't run the football, I don't know how much success they can have, and that's for both teams.
Well, gentlemen, I began by teasing, and I'm just very serious. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your effort. I appreciate everything that we did together in Irvine, and we will do it again on Sunday. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Saints Hour.
Sure, Oz.
You bet. Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak. You bet, pal. See you on Friday, Deuce, and Jeff, I'll see you on Sunday. Welcome back. Mike Haas here on the Saints Hour, along with New Orleans Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak. And Deuce, want to begin with you today. Taysom Hill was officially named as one of the captains and was officially kind of put at tight end from the quarterback room. He could, you know, you put him in any position, doesn't really matter, just makes him better. Is he a position, if I were to say, where do the Saints have a matchup advantage for Carolina Saints offense defense? Is he one of those positions? I guess that's kind of a two-edged question. Talk about Taysom a little bit, and is there a position where the Saints have a markedly advantage against Carolina?
For me, I don't know if it's necessarily a position. I think it's more of a matchup. And so when Taysom comes on the field, I want to know, well, first, congratulations to him being named the captain. It's always a great honor to have the respect of your teammates. I mean, I think that speaks volumes for him and the work that he's put in and that they see in his leadership skills. So first, congratulations for that honor. As far as a position, it doesn't really matter to me, particularly when the other quarterback is on the field, because now I can line him up, whether it's tight end, whether it's the F at fullback, whether it's the H at halfback, or he's split out wide as a flex tight end. I want to know what defense does when he is on the field. What are they playing? Are they playing nickel? Are they playing 4-3? And now for the Saints, what other players do they bring in with Taysom? Is it a true fullback into the game? So now Taysom lines up at tight end, or does he line up at the halfback position? Is there another halfback? Is Alvin in the game with him? So now are they treating him as a tight end, and what defense did they go to? Did they check to base? Because most defense plays, you know, base against 21 personnel. If they bring another tight end into the game, what do they do? Do they go to the nickel? And so once you've seen how they're going to play him from that standpoint, it allows me to create matchups. And he said, what do you mean you're going to create matchups? Well, we're in 12, you know, well, let's just call it, you only have, you have Alvin, two tight ends. I don't know what they call it, but let's call it 13 personnel. So normally that's going to get a 4-3. That's normally going to be even a 4-3 base defense, 13 personnel. Once I move Alvin out of the backfield, and if I put Taysom at the H, at the traditional tailback position, who goes and cover Alvin? How are they going to play that? If I flex one guy and I have two players on one right side, Alvin's lined up as a receiver, or, you know, the receiver is in trips, how are they playing that? So that's what I want to identify. You create isolations, you create mismatches, but you also create it via personnel and how you're moving and tinkering with the pieces.
Jeff, is there an area that you feel the Saints, and it could be offense or defense, we always seem to focus on the offense. We haven't talked a lot about Carolina's defense or the Saints' defense. I mean, I guess it's, you know, that's a good thing, really, from a Saints defense standpoint. But if you were to look at the game book and go, all right, you know, they needed to win this area, this battleground on Sunday, what would it be?
Yeah, that's tough. I think it's going to vary week to week. I think just generally speaking, rushing coverage is an area where I need this team to be dominant. And I think we make the mistake sometimes of talking about the pass rush and talking about coverage as if they're two separate things. And I don't think one can be great without the other being at least pretty good, right? If you can't cover the ball's coming out to a wide open receiver. If you never get to the quarterback, then eventually a receiver's going to come open. So, you know, with Chase Young, with Cam Jordan, with Carl Granderson, and ideally with Marshawn Lattimore and Paulson Adebo on the field, it looks like Marshawn's going to be ready to go. Khalid McKinstry is back at practice as well. So, I mean, if that can be an elite unit, then I think this everything gets easier, right? Like when you hear a lot of people talk about the Saints, they just tend to focus on the offense, like you mentioned. But it becomes a lot easier to play offense when you're getting put in advantageous situations, when you're playing with a lead, right? When you're not constantly trying to answer score after score after score. And I think if this Saints season, if this Saints team can find success in the way that I think the team feels like they can, and maybe not a whole ton of people outside the building agree with, it's going to be through that. It's going to be through being a dominant pass rush and coverage defense. And I think that's got to start against the team that allowed, what, the most sacks in the NFL last year?
62.
Right, Bryce Young?
62 for him.
I mean, if that's going to be a good kind of litmus test for where this pass rush is.
Well, gentlemen, I begin.
Can I follow up on
sure.
that? What Jeff just said. Here's the thing, Jeff. When you talk about that, knowing that he was sacked so many times, what does that tell you? They're going to play action. They're going to run the football. They're going to try to move the pocket. So for the Saints, if they don't stop the run, because this team is going to try to run the football, if the Saints don't stop the run, they're not going to get in many opportunities where they can say we can get after the pass rusher. because they're going to continue to be committed to running the football. And then you're going to get the movement of the pocket, and, you know, you'll get the shot plays down the field. But it, for me, even the Saints, I mean, both of these teams, whoever can establish some type of run game and have be committed to running the football, I think that's who's going to win this football game. Now, is that a cliche? Probably so. But, I mean, at this point, the way that these teams are built, if they can't run the football, I don't know how much success they can have, and that's for both teams.
Well, gentlemen, I began by teasing, and I'm just very serious. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your effort. I appreciate everything that we did together in Irvine, and we will do it again on Sunday. Thanks for joining us tonight on the Saints Hour.
Sure, Oz.
You bet. Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak. You bet, pal. See you on Friday, Deuce, and Jeff, I'll see you on Sunday.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.